Hi, everybody, and thank you for joining us for the Preceptor Podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Ryan, and today we have joining us Aaron Durval. Aaron, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you both for having me on. I am Aaron Durval. I am an assistant professor with the Gregory School of Pharmacy down in West Palm Beach, Florida. I am also a preceptor at an independent pharmacy, Atlantis Pharmacy, located in Atlantis, Florida.
And we're really excited to have Aaron on today to talk a little bit about a call to action that was put out by the Surgeon General back on October 7th. And this call to action was released and it was talking about hypertension control. And Aaron, could you kind of give us some basics of what was in there?
Absolutely. The Surgeon General pretty much put out three goals that they had. And I'll kind of broadly talk about the three goals and then kind of hopefully list a little bit further in some of the strategies that they have. So the first goal was to make hypertension a national priority. Their second goal was to ensure that places where people live, learn, work, and play will support hypertension control. And then finally, with goal number three, it was to optimize patient care for hypertension control. So on a broad strokes, it's kind of things that most healthcare professionals would expect from a Surgeon General report in terms of the goals. The strategies did delve deeper into a lot of the areas that we as healthcare professionals and then as pharmacists really should be looking at. So strategy A within goal number one talks about increasing the awareness of the risk of uncontrolled hypertension. And they also talk about recognizing the economic need of uncontrolled hypertension and then eliminating the disparities that are part of the both the treatment and the control of hypertension. And so within goal number one, I thought the most interesting part of this was that although it's an obvious goal to make it a national priority, the Surgeon General report did hit on a lot of the areas that most healthcare practitioners do see in the fact that most patients aren't controlling their hypertension to the level of standard guidelines. And there are a lot of disparities within the healthcare system that do limit them from receiving the proper control. As you move into goal number two, they also had three other strategies that talked about a lot of the access to care and the availability. So strategy A talked about the access and the availability to physical activity. Strategy B promotes the access and availability of healthy food options. And then strategy C talks about promoting links between these clinical services and community programs. And so this was interesting from my standpoint too, is that we are all aware that both physical activity and healthy eating are a great part of hypertension control, but not a lot of people have the access that we expect them to. And so the Surgeon General report really called out the disparities within different populations on their limited access and did really push for the community health workers, nurse practitioners, social workers, pharmacy technicians to get involved in this care to be able to put those pieces together to provide the access that is necessary for patients. And finally, strategy A and B and C within goal three talked about advancing the use of standardized treatments approaches, promoting the use of healthcare teams, as well as empowering and equipping the patient for self-monitoring. So this was probably the most exciting part for myself as a pharmacist in the setting that I am in, because it really did push for the standardized teams and adhering to a lot of the guidelines that are put forth to make sure that the patients are on the correct medication. And then of course, empowering the patient. Anytime a patient gets involved in their own care and feels like they are part of the decision-making, they're more likely to stay adherent.
Yeah, and I think you touched on my next question a little bit, but I really wanted to expand on it some more. So pharmacists have a number of ways and a number of different practice opportunities to interact with these patients at risk that we're really trying to help in the Surgeon General's guidelines. What do you see as the direct call to the pharmacist profession that we can all get behind to make this a reality?
That's a good question. I think I could probably take it on two different levels. So there could be kind of the starter level for the pharmacist that is kind of really pushing their services at the pharmacy, kind of pushing themselves outside of bench dispensing. And then there could be that advanced role. So starting kind of with the intermediate level there. Most pharmacists, I think this report will tell them to do, is getting that patient involved. So a lot of technicians can actually take a course that's from the American Heart Association to be able to be certified in either taking blood pressures or being able to recommend appropriate blood pressures to patients. And so the first step really is to make the awareness. So going along with goal number one, making it a national priority, is making your patients aware that there are two different avenues for management, either through the pharmacy, like the pharmacy I work in, we do offer blood pressure checks through a pharmacist or a technician or a pharmacy intern based on the staff that's available. And they can take their blood pressure at the pharmacy. And then of course we recommend appropriate and accurate blood pressure monitor. So I think that could be the first step. And then for those that are already doing that, that want to do more, that advanced pharmacy, I think would be involving themselves with practitioners. So there's a lot of push within the report to have teams, and knowing the physicians that we work with here, they are strapped for time in terms of trying to meet a lot of these quality measures. Those patients are coming in for an acute condition, and then they're looking down going, oops, your blood pressure's out of control. Now what do I do? That'll be another visit, which we all know doesn't ever happen. So pharmacy can be involved with that, where there's referral forms from that physician's office to the pharmacy, making the physicians aware that you're offering the services of blood pressure checks. And then finally, the ultimate would be that collaborative practice within the pharmacy and the physician's office, where pharmacists can control how to adjust or monitor their medication use based on what's been going on. So I think that's the ultimate level, is really getting that whole team approach, patient, clinician, and pharmacist.
And I just want to interject on that point because I saw a study in the Journal of the American Medical Association, of all places, that highlighted the fact that pharmacists in a community setting in particular are the most accessible profession and are sometimes up to three times more accessible or seen three times more frequently than primary care physicians. And the conclusion of that article was physicians need to partner more with community pharmacists to do this exact type of care. So it was really refreshing to see that from the American Medical Association, certainly. And I think this is really, it's a call to arms for pharmacists that we've had for a long time. And I think everything's kind of coming to a head as we're talking about value-based care and the amount of impact that pharmacists can have on patients as a whole. So I just wanted to throw that in there. If you have anything else you'd like to add, please feel free. But I just wanted to make sure that that was part of this conversation as well.
I know I it is nice to see that the medical association is actually putting out the same information that pharmacists have been saying for many years. And so I think at this moment, what we're trying to do is actually put that link together. And the Surgeon General's report really hit home on needing that link between pharmacy and the patient and the provider. And so to me, that is the thing that pharmacists need to do. And I don't know if we necessarily are always quick to reach out to those other providers to say, hey, I see a lot of your patients and I'm noticing as we take blood pressures, they're not at the goal that they should be. Is this something that I should refer them back to you, or is there a way that we can help out? And I think that conversation, if you put it in that manner, kind of opens up a provider's eyes to, oh, you want to help me? Great. I just can't manage all of this at the moment. And so having that extra team member would be super helpful. So I agree that I'm glad that the medical association is recognizing there's more team members to include.
So this all sounds really great. And I think one of the first things we all think about is the time that's involved. Is there a way for pharmacists to bill for doing these blood pressures and making these adjustments to therapy? Is there a way for us to bill either as pharmacists or if the technicians are getting licensed, is there a way for us to get reimbursement for that?
That's a great question, because ultimately, if we don't get paid, this is not a sustainable service that we can offer, whether it's pharmacists or technicians. So currently, there are a couple different ways that I know pharmacists can be billed for their time. One of them would actually be involved with that pharmacist in the primary care clinic. And there are ways to bill under incident two billing. For certain services within that. But that would, again, in order to do that, the pharmacist has to physically be within the same vicinity as the physician. Now, most of us are probably practicing in a standalone community pharmacy. So the billing avenue would be a little bit different. And there are a couple different ways to do this is actually reaching out to any of the insurance providers. And when I say insurance providers, I'm talking about the medical side of the billing, not the pharmacy benefit managers. And being able to partner with the medical side of billing, you can actually tap into some of the money that they have set aside for services like this to be billed for clinically. Now, the reason that I know this is that my pharmacy, Atlantis Pharmacy, is involved with CPESN, Community Pharmacy Enhanced Service Network of Florida. And this is one of the areas that we are looking into. Based on the services of blood pressure management that we have, we are going to different payers to advocate for reimbursement for the clinical service. So being able to state that we can service their patients and be able to get them under control and have a contract to state that. So those are the two avenues that I know. They're not easy and they're not knocking at our doors to do this. So it does require the pharmacists to be knowledgeable in the area and then willing to put themselves out there and say, hey, you know, I'm already doing this. Let me just make a bigger impact with more of your patients.
Yeah, and I think it's really good to highlight that this is the medical billing side, which is not something that all pharmacists are comfortable with. But as we see more and more of a transition from fee-for-service-based reimbursement to value-based care, I think we're going to continue to see these opportunities for pharmacy practice as a whole, and certainly community pharmacy as well.
Absolutely, because that really is going to be the only way to have these sustainable services, things that are beyond the product that most pharmacists are already doing these consultations. And so to make them sustainable in the future, it has to go through a reimbursement. And the medical side can do that.
Well, I do want to ask you one more question. And this is coming from my background as a community pharmacist. I know there's some hesitancy out there about home blood pressure monitoring. Glucose monitoring we'll save for another day. But in terms of, you know, there's always concerns that it's not as accurate to have an automatic blood pressure cuff in some instances as what you're going to get when a person trained to measure blood pressure is doing it. So I wanted to get your sense of how accurate home blood pressure monitoring is and what we can tell to patients to make sure we're getting as accurate a reading as possible.
That's a great question too, because it is a concern that patients may be unnecessarily taking blood pressures that aren't giving true values. So without having a lot of the specifics on the top of my head, there are a number of self-blood pressure monitors that are recommended by the American Heart Association. To my knowledge on that, that would be one where I would say is most accurate. However, what we have our patients do here is because we do offer a blood pressure check service, is typically we have them come in, we take the blood pressure through standard measures, and then they take their blood pressure on the electronic one as well, and we kind of compare and see. And we're always telling our patients too that if you ever feel like that blood pressure you're getting at home is kind of a little off, a couple measures that we always tell them to do is making sure that in a quiet room, a lot of them are very accurate or super sensitive. So any noise of a dog or a TV or things like that can kind of throw them off a little bit. And it pumps the blood pressure machine up again. And so kind of elevates things a little higher than normal. And I say, if they're still getting a reading that's different, to come back into the pharmacy. And we have troubleshooted a number of patients of ours with the manufacturer to say, hey, you know, listen, it's not getting what we're getting. And they have been very good about sending out new machines if there has been an issue with them. So that's usually what we try to recommend, is ones that are supported by an association and then troubleshooting them with them.
This is great information. I've been a hospital pharmacist, so it's never something I had no idea that it could do that. My dad does home blood pressure monitoring, and I walked in on him one day doing it, and he had like his ankles crossed, and I'm like, you can't do that. You gotta, and then just didn't even know that, like, the ways this could affect it. So I'm sure when we were home, we had higher than normal blood pressures because everybody's talking around him.
And there's great counseling points to do that. And so at the pharmacy here, because we do take a lot of interns from the college, this is a great opportunity for them to interact with patients too, just as a quick reminder of things like you said, Sarah, the simple thing about don't cross your legs, and reminding patients about when they drink coffee or if they have a cigarette, hopefully they're not, but those types of things and how it's going to influence the blood pressure. So just constant reminders of simple things like that. Not to mention most pharmacies too, different little angle, but I just thought of it, is to plug a lot of this on their social media. So I think a lot of, at least independent pharmacies that I know of, are getting into the realm of trying to put a lot of patient education on Facebook or Instagram. And so these are things that you can kind of rotate on a quarterly basis of, don't forget about your heart. And here are some simple tips to make sure you're monitoring and managing your hypertension well.
Erin, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us about hypertension and the Surgeon General's guidelines. I really think this is a valuable discussion. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I was happy to do so. Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for joining us for this episode of the Pharmacy Preceptor Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please like or subscribe. We would love your feedback on topics that interest you and how we can make this podcast better. Please submit your comments to help us develop content that best serves you. Thank you, everyone.